This is an ENN special report. Now reporting.
Six.
When the clock struck six, it meant one thing.
I'm one of the greatest broadcasters on planet Earth.
And I know that's hearsay here. It's
not hearsay. It's not heresy. Hearsay.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Hey, everyone. Hi. Hell, hello. Hell, well, hi. I would like to welcome you to ENN. And I'd like to start off this ENN by saying good evening to Michael.
I'm trying to grow for you, Peter.
I'd also like to say good evening to Don. All right, I think we're...
We think we're what? Where did that come from?
You yelled at me. That was you yelling. Because you could tell...
Is that today?
Yeah.
Oh, you were very disgusted.
I thought you guys had like been arguing about the same thing so literally for 5 minutes, I was hitting you with, okay, I think it's time to move on, which of course enrages you. So, let's hear that one more time, Anthony. That was vintage. All right, I think we're
We think we're what?
You're such a jerk. You ever hear yourself and go, "What a jerk I am"?
You know what, Peter? You can't cut one of these arguments short with him.
No, you got to keep going.
I was making an argument.
Yeah,
we've seen that. I enjoy arguing. A lot.
Yeah, you really do.
But I just don't like when Peter tries to change the subject because he's bored.
Well, but
yeah, but that's a good take that maybe everybody's bored.
I was going to say.
I was getting bored by it.
Don't you think every blue moon, instead of thinking I'm just a yo-yo, that if I specifically weigh in to say, all right, well, maybe it's time to move on here, there's at least some other yo-yos who agree it's time to move on.
He is a broadcasting genius, Don.
Thank you.
It's not about being right or wrong. It's just that... Michael's right. I just wasn't ready to move on. and I didn't want anybody to tell me anything different.
Well, that's what happens. That's when you really set Don off, when anyone weighs in to tell him what's what when he's in the middle of going.
Let me tell you what, Peter. I don't know if you even know this. If you didn't cut that short, he would be calling me on the phone at 6:27 when I left there and still arguing about the Giants being the New York Giants, not New Jersey. Right. He would not stop.
You do understand I'd be arguing with your voicemail.
Well,
no,
yeah, naturally.
I taped the open, but I mean, I've got 20 minutes where I could like breathe a little bit.
There you go. So that's when he would answer. I'd also like to say good evening to myself, Capo Caco. Now, we haven't had any time because the Yankees are so busy doing things that baffles people. We haven't had really a moment to talk about the NBA and what happened in the Bucks-Hawks game yesterday. And a couple of things happened. First of all, the Bucks really got beaten from pillar to post by the Hawks, who did it without Trae Young. And, guys, I was, you know, able to comprehend how a Paul George-led but Kawhi Leonard-less Clippers can get wins over the Suns. I did not see a world in which the Hawks could win without Trae Young. And before we even get into the Giannis situation, just to be clear, they held this lead at 10 points or more the whole time Giannis was playing. This isn't like Giannis got hurt and then they fell apart. Now, Giannis was starting to heat up in the third quarter when he got hurt, and there is good news on that. The word is it is a hyperextension. However, there is no structural damage to Giannis, which is, if you guys saw the moment when it happened, a huge, huge win, considering, Michael, I don't know if you saw the highlight. I know you were calling the game. It looked like it was over for Giannis in that moment.
Yeah, he looked like he was in really bad shape. I mean, I thought I was expecting much worse news today.
Let's hear from Jalen Rose, though, who says that the Bucks are in some trouble.
Without Giannis, if the Hawks get Trae Young back, they just waxed the Bucks last night. And Giannis had 0 points in the first quarter before he got injured. Mm-hmm. Like last night, we can't ignore what just happened. Bogdanovich, Lou Will, they played well. Cam Reddish got his confidence going, was terrific defensively. Capella was making shots like Larry Bird over the backboard. Now all of a sudden, this young Atlanta Hawks team ties this series 2-2, and they may get Trae Young back, who's been putting on the show this postseason?
It's a good point. it's a worrisome spot, guys. If they get Trae Young back and Giannis doesn't come back, I don't see a world in which the Bucks win this series.
Bucks still have two good players left over, Middleton and Holiday.
It'll just be interesting to see if Budenholzer can come up with a plan for those guys that's competitive with this Hawks team. And, man, you got to give it up to the Hawks, though. You got to give it up to Lou Williams.
They call him Lou Will.
Very, very impressed. Word on the street is LeBron James might be done with USA Basketball. Here, Jerry Colangelo, who runs USA Basketball, he was on KJZ, and he was asked if LeBron is done with Team USA.
I would think so. Father time takes its toll. And you guys know that because if you're a human being, your body is built to go so long, depending on what your sport is. And then it's a downhill situation. And LeBron made choices these last couple of Olympics not to participate because he's got a lot of things going on in his life. And so he put in his time. He made a contribution that is appreciated. But I think his time is over.
I mean, the next Olympics is 4 years from now, so he'll be 39. I wouldn't count him out, though, because if Bronny's playing, then he'll play with him.
What? Yeah. Right. We're all sure, it seems, that everything comes down to what Bronny does.
Oh, he's hanging around for Bronny.
I kind of feel... By the way, are any of LeBron's other kids in the conversation as talented as Bronny?
I think he has two sons and a daughter, right? I think the second son's a pretty good player. I don't know if he's as good as Bronny.
I mean, by the way, where do you go in life when you're playing basketball as a kid, and LeBron James and Drake are showing up to your high school games?
But you know, that's probably normal to him.
Yeah, I mean, everything.
They're always around the house.
What is normal when you're the child of LeBron James?
I asked Charlie that the other day.
Guys, I thought this was interesting. I've been looking around to see what players are coming to the defense of Phil Jackson after what Scottie Pippen said the other day.
And what are you finding?
And Scottie, of course, accused Phil Jackson of being a racist. Many people then went on social media and dug up a lot of quotes from Phil Jackson, some of which I remember, some of which I forgot about, which are some of the receipts Scottie may have been looking for when he was having that conversation. You know, for example, you bring up the fact that you didn't get to take the last shot in a game. That is not remote proof of racism. However, some of these quotes from Phil, I forgot how weird they were, from his book. Anyways, you tell me if this helps, guys. Robert Horry came to Phil Jackson's defense, and he said, "I've played for Phil. I don't think Phil's racist. He said some stuff before that I kind of had to check him on. But for me, I don't think he's racist."
Well, why doesn't somebody ask Walt Frazier? He used to room with him, and he swears by the guy.
Well, why? I mean, Walt Frazier could come out himself.
Well, I mean, we'll get Walt Frazier on. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's an unbelievable thing to be accused of.
Well, but hold on. You don't find it funny, though, that Robert Horry's attempt at defending him was... Don, that was barely a defense.
Yeah, it was...
He was like, well, yeah, he said things that are questionable, but no, I don't think he's a racist.
But, all right. He obviously knows better than we do. But his number one reason was for not taking the last shot, not anything that he said or did, right?
Well, that was the reason that was the context in which he told it, which made the whole thing seem silly.
Right, but you've got to give me better context than that. Now, if you want to say that and then you get challenged on it, well, I'll tell you more if you like. But when you stand on, he didn't let me take the last shot, in a game where the guy did take the last shot and hit it, I need a little bit more than that, no?
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if others, what other people's takes are on this. Or maybe it'll just go away. Who knows? But yeah, some of those, if you go look up some of those quotes from Phil's books, they are a little weird.
Like what, though?
Yeah. I mean, you got to give me something.
You got to give me something.
All right. You guys want me? Now you want me to pull up receipts, do you?
Well, I mean, but now we're left to our imagination, and that's not fair.
Okay, you're right. That's not fair. Give me a moment, and I'll pull the things that I'm talking about. In the meantime, Let's go down to the D.C. area where Kyle Schwarber, we haven't spent enough time talking about the madness that has been Kyle Schwarber on the Nationals. Let's hear from our friends on Masson calling the action last night.
Oh, my. I can't believe it. See you later. Come on.
I've got some, I found some things out today about Schwarber and why he's doing this. And it runs contrary to all of our friends who are obsessed with the launch angle and stuff like that. The guy that straightened Schwarber out is Kevin Long. Told him, forget about all these plans. Just swing the way you used to swing when you first came up. Don't think up there. Don't worry about the plane of what the pitch. And just go up there and let your natural talent take over. And this is what the guy's doing. These players today are overloaded with information. And Kevin is the best of both worlds. When he was here, he was a great hitting coach. He's the best of both worlds. He's going to get down to the nitty-gritty. He's going to take the information that you give him, but he's going to let the natural talent play out. Because you look at what Schwarber did the last couple of years at the Cubs. Became a 200 hitter. He's not a 200 hitter. This guy used to be great. That was one of the things I said during the offseason. That's who the Yankees should have gotten. The Yankees have long loved Schwarber. And this ballpark, with that swing, he would have done unbelievable damage. But, he got $10 million from the Nationals, and the Yankees didn't have that to spend.
He's 0-for-3 with three strikeouts today, but
it's been nasty.
Nationals
though.
Are still up 8-5 on the Rays in the bottom of the sixth.
They never lose.
They have not been losing. From Phil's book, Maverick, this is a long time ago, 1976, Phil Jackson. White players are often more willing to run patterns and to work collectively. Because of the predominance of blacks in pro basketball, the sport is rapidly disintegrating into a one-on-one sport. There are only 5 or 6 NBA teams who play with more than a superficial degree of team unity. On the Knicks, the starting front court played white basketball, while guards played black basketball. October 99. I don't mean to say that as a snide remark toward a certain population in our society, but they have a limitation of their attention span, a lot of it probably due to too much rap music going in their ears and coming out of their being. October 2005, when asked about dress code. I think it's important that the players take their end of it, get out of the prison garb and the thuggery aspect of basketball that has come along with hip-hop music in the last 7 or 8 years. Listen, is any of it enough that you can go, oh, my God, the guy's absolutely racist? I don't know, but all of it sounds – it's enough that I was like, okay. Maybe Scotty wasn't being completely crazy. But anyways, it'll just be interesting to watch and see if more people say anything. Because obviously, guys, this is someone who's been a part of the basketball community for, what, 50 years?
Yep.
So there's more than enough people who will have opinions on Phil one way or the other.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Moving on, let's talk Adam Fox for a second, Don. What can you tell us about this Norris win for the young man?
He deserved it statistically when you consider the team he played on, that he was deserving of this award. But what happens sometimes in all sports with awards is reputation carries more than like what you did in that moment. I mean, this you're talking about some of the greats in the game to win the Norris Trophy, and to be able to do it in your second year when you're going up against a guy like Victor Hedman who had won it before. And I really thought that that's where they would lean, and they got it right. He had an amazing, amazing season in points and plus minus on a team that wasn't good enough to make the playoffs. He had a phenomenal season, and he's a lot like DeGrom, Michael, in the sense that we've waited for a lot of good young players with the Rangers. And we thought that Fox would be good. He way exceeded expectations. And now he's become a flat-out star on the team in a position that is a difference maker. And I'm excited to see him grow into what could be maybe this generation's Brian Leetch. I think he's that good of a player.
Well, let's hear from
It's a great story, too, because he's from Long Island, grew up a Ranger fan, yeah. And here he is, and he's doing great things.
Here's Adam Fox on winning the Norris.
It's definitely special to have my friends and family come see me play. It's definitely a privilege for me to play for the Rangers, and you know, to have you, former Ranger and you know Norris Trophy winner, and present me the award. It's special, and I know the history and your history as a Ranger, and just thankful to you know have this opportunity.
Now Brian Leetch, and you know, awarded him or was the one on the Zoom to announce it, so that was pretty cool for him.
Connor McDavid unanimously wins the Hart Trophy. The league's MVP.
And I'm glad Michael brought that up. I don't know if he just did it to pacify me, but you brought up guys that you would, you know, pay to see. And
I would.
The thing that makes him so special, McDavid, and again, he plays in Edmonton, so time difference and all that, but he's the fastest player in the history of the NHL to do the things with the speed that he has. Like, anybody could be fast, but he could be fast with the hand-eye coordination, the shot, and to make – players around him better. He is such a terrific, terrific player. Typical hockey, though, very unassuming and doesn't say a lot. Much like Sidney Crosby when he first came up, Peter. You know, kind of just quiet, and it doesn't seem like a lot of big personality, but boy, to kick and play.
Does he hit the puck? Can he slap it as hard as Al MacInnis? If not, I don't want to hear from him. Actually, you know what? I'm being serious. As you were talking, I realized I've never really watched him play. I'm a little embarrassed.
I don't know, you know, the hockey package. NBC, you know, did a good job of trying to get him on occasionally, but, you know, games are on at 9 o'clock at night, and they've only been to playoffs a couple of times since he's been there, so I think you'll be very impressed.
Now, we just mentioned Kyle Schwarber and the fact that he just hit his 16th home run in June yesterday, 16 over the last 18 games. But he said he hasn't been approached about the home run derby, but said that he would probably pass and keep things moving, saving it for the second half of the season. Of course, we know that Shohei Ohtani is in there. Do we have the official word on Pete Alonso?
I think he's doing it.
He is doing it, right?
Yeah, he's doing it.
I know that was his plan originally, was to defend, because, of course, the last one was 2 years ago at this point. And also, we mentioned earlier, Dodgers pitcher Trevor Bauer is facing allegations of assault by a woman stemming from a sexual encounter. The Pasadena, California Police Department is looking into the alleged assault, which supposedly happened around the middle of May. The woman was granted a domestic violence restraining order in L.A. County Superior Court. Bauer's agent has denied any wrongdoing, and the case could be turned over to the district attorney's office as soon as later on today, at which time we would find out whether they would move forward with the case. But Michael, you said that Bauer has admitted that there was a sexual relationship, but that it was consensual.
That's what I read, that it was consensual, and he had met the woman online, I guess. But who knows?
And it was rough, right? Well,
that was the language that he used. That'll do it for ENN on this Wednesday, June 30th.
How do the Yankees do without Judge? We'll talk about it tomorrow. Chris Carlin's coming up. In the words of Billy Joel, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. I'm afraid it's time for goodbye again. See everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.